Snake and Banter is brought to you by eSportsBet, the industry's leading crypto odds matrix, and they are still running one of their best first-time deposit bonuses I've heard of, which is the up to 100 USDT bet forgiveness offer. So basically what you do is, if you've never put crypto on the site, put it on, make a bet anywhere up to 100 USDT. If you lose the bet, they will just return the stake to you. If you message the mod mail on Discord, discord.gg/esportsbet, tell them Last Free Nation or Foreign sent you. Now, what I would suggest you do, if you ever listen to those episodes where I'm telling you who I think's going to win, I often pick out an underdog. So someone like when OG was playing Heroic, I think it's like 2.8 odds or something. Those are the ones I think to use that bonus on. Because then what you do is, if you win anywhere on the bet with the underdog, you're going to get like 2.8 times your stake, and if you lose, you just get the original stake back, don't you? Easy peasy. Right, I'm here for another episode of Snake and Banter, the show that me and Maui Snake do. Obviously, he is Maui Snake. Snake, I bring the banter. Now, we actually all banter on the show, don't worry about that, but it's not as simple as that. But our guest for this episode is going to be Blame F, who is obviously playing for Astralis now, previously played for Complexity, Heroic, etc., all that jazz. Right. One thing I want to just start out with before we actually get into the show, Blame F, is just as a general trend, I think the weird thing about this year with the LAN circuit is we never did fully come back from the online period where there's, like, the old period, if people know, there were way too many LANs because there was all the tier 2 LANs as well. And everyone used to basically play, like, minimum a LAN a month, if not, like, a couple, depending on where it's the busy period. How have you actually handled this latter period? Because basically, it's been kind of, like, months now where, aside from, like, the CCT tournament, which was a smaller one, you haven't really been playing, like, true tier 1 LAN couch. So what have you been doing now? How have you been able to handle sort of the downtime?
You mean with not traveling a lot lately?
Just not having events, yeah, because you didn't get to the major, obviously. You know, you're just chilling, waiting for next year to begin, basically.
Yeah, I think it's a bit... It's not that hard. Like, obviously, it's a big disaster for us not to qualify for the major, but like, even though I'm playing Counter-Strike and I love playing Counter-Strike, I also enjoy watching Counter-Strike. Like, I get really excited when I can watch big matches, okay. You know. Like, I will always, like, plan my day around it, make sure that I'm planning my best meals around that time.
What an nerd! You're just, like, a big fan with the popcorn, yeah, and everything. Okay.
I can sit and enjoy it and maybe watch it with some friends or something. So, of course, it's, like, annoying when there's not a lot for us to play of the big Tier 1 tournaments, but I get... Not as excited as playing it, obviously, but I like, it's like a big thing for me. If there's like a big final, like a big semifinal, or two teams with a good storyline, I always make sure to watch it. And, you know, I just I do that consistently, I think.
Okay. No, fair enough. I mean, to be fair, you do have the rep that you watch demos, whereas, like, put it this way, I know some star players who, my joke would be, the only demos they ever watched were the ones they were creating. I think you get the punchline there if you're a fan at home. You'd be shocked, by the way, how many of your favourite players that applies to and never watched a bloody POV of any opponent ever. Right, Blame F, what we always do on this show is the guest has to bring the first topic. So what was your topic you picked for the good category?
Okay, my good topic, it's a bit obvious, obviously, but my good point was that the G2 finally won a trophy. And to be a little bit more specific, I think, especially Nico, I think for me is like... the top one or top two rifle for a long period of time now. And I really think that a guy of his caliber who, I think he can change the game in the same way that some of those like best orbs in the world can. And not a lot of rifles can do that. I think he can single-handedly change a game, but I don't think a lot of other rifles can do that. Usually it's the orb who does that. So I think having Nico and not competing for the big titles is kind of like not how it should be, at least in my eyes. So I think... And then also just like, I look up to him kind of because we're playing a lot of the same positions. So I always, and he has like a very different play.
It seems like a play you must have modeled your game off a bit, like just in terms of the way he plays, the resource, the rifle element.
Oh yeah, I think just Nico and me, like we have the same positions, but I'm playing way more of, I think, timings and utility and teammates and all that kind of stuff, where he's playing a little bit more heads up Counter-Strike. I feel like taking more duels and playing a little bit more aggressive in that sense. I think also I'm making more plays around my position where I'm like in a lot of different positions going aggressive, where he's more like relying on his aim. He doesn't have to make exaggerated plays in order to get kills, where I feel like I have to do that more. So yeah, I think a rifle like that of his caliber should just be winning trophies, honestly, or at least like competing for them. So that made me very happy to see that. And they also have the old sports psychologist we had in Complexity, they have him now, and I know he's a great guy, Edward. So I think maybe, I don't know if that's what made the difference, but maybe it helped them to get him on the team.
All right.
And yeah, just overall, I think the team just looked way better at this event. Like, to give Hooks some credit, the team had like the best T sides this event. They had like 68% win percent on T side, even though they lost one map 13-2 on the T side. They still managed to have the best T sides overall. And yeah, obviously Monesi is looking incredible. I think he's definitely like on his way up to compete with like the likes of Simple and Saiwu. And I think also this was maybe one of the first events where we saw JKS and Honda both like stepping up more than they have before. So yeah, just for me overall, it was just like a good experience to watch. I think that's like the G2 we saw this time was like the G2 that they tried to build, but they didn't show in the beginning of this lineup. Like with the other people stepping up more, not only Nico, I also saw Nico like maybe sacrificing himself a bit more. Like he was like running in first in a lot of situations where usually maybe someone else would do it, I think. So yeah, I think just they look like a very solid squad with multiple winning factors.
Right. It obviously turns out, Maui, there's slight overlap with what your point's going to be. So maybe just leave out the Hooksy part and talk about the rest of G2, and then your point can be that, obviously, afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was going to focus on the fact that picking out Nico, especially the fact that you compare yourself with Nico, and yeah, you guys play similar stuff, but I'd say like Nico basically can play faster because he can just rely so much on his mechanics. And I don't think it's like, I mean, obviously BlameF, you're incredibly skilled mechanically, but I don't think many people would question the fact that Nico is probably the most mechanically skilled in the space right now. I mean, you could probably compare him with just a few people, you would be in that tier, but then like actually Xantarez and then Axile would be amongst that kind of company. But yeah, I think that when there's a rifler, like we were just talking on some other shows, or it's been a point that I think a few people have brought up lately, the fact that riflers, the skill ceiling has kind of been hit. But I think that with the A4 coming back into play, we're starting to see how good riflers are able to actually take over games once again, because as opposed to just running into an A1S that's just going to four body shot you, and anybody in the world can do that that's playing at the tier one level, you can now see that someone that's actually a good AK player can beat M4 A4 players, and people that are actually good with the A4 are once again beginning to play really well too. And I think that this is just a good position for the game to be in, that someone like Nico can succeed, that he doesn't feel like just about any other rifler, because when everybody else was using the A1S, it was pretty hard to distinguish who was much better versus who was just pretty good. So, yeah, I mean, for G2, on top of that, as an organization, they hadn't won a tier one trophy for, I think, some three, four, like maybe 4 years or so. Like, that's something, for the amount of investment that they put into the space, it feels almost criminal that they haven't done as well. And you can kind of blame the fact that maybe they weren't putting together the best rosters. But I think you look at some of those rosters on paper, and it's hard to find huge flaws in a few of them that actually didn't achieve those kinds of results. So, yeah, it's once again, just good to see a big org actually coming out on top.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of points on this one. I definitely agree on the Nico angle. Like, if we just look at the greatness of his career, it's actually a bit depressing, dude. Like, I know people know that he's had teams that, like, sometimes the teammates weren't as good. But the weird thing is, in FaZe and G2, he's also had a whole bunch of really good teammates. But where the fuck are the trophies? Like, if people don't know, I guarantee everyone go and do this. Not you, literally, but the fans at home. Go on HLTV and go to that page where it shows trophies, right? You will be absolutely shocked if you look at Nico's page. You're going to actually think, like, these are all right, these are the trophies he won, but is that it? Because, for example, right, he's won 12 trophies on that page. One's an online IEM New York, so forget that one. Then, two are blasts, and one was that really small four-team E-League invitation. Like, dude, once you take them away, it becomes something mad. Like, he's won about, like, 7 or 8 trophies, and it's stuff like Star Series or, like, smaller ESLs or ESL New York's, like, basically the best win of his career or something. Like, he doesn't have, actually, like, he has nothing compared to a major. He has none of the, like, Katowice, Cologne, like, people would be shocked how few trophies he's won. Meanwhile, like, just to give you a random example, this isn't a star player, but it's a role player. Someone like Exist has like 25 trophies, if people don't know. Like, that's the kind of scale you can be at in this game. So I actually do think it's brutal when you consider he's played so many years at the top, how few times he's actually got to be the champion and got to win. And then that ties in with, as you were saying, Maui Snake, G2, the org, has been like just disproportionately cursed as a team. Like, the joke is, some of the other teams aren't even as good, but they still stole a trophy every now and then, or had like one tournament where it went well. G2, I think, had probably the worst position over the last 3 or 4 years, which is they were like a top five team the whole time, just never ever won a trophy. Like, so G2 of the org clearly has spent money. Like, the joke is buying Nico himself was enormous. That was like an enormous sign that people don't know from fucking FaZe Clan. They aren't letting you go cheap. And they have stacked the talent. Like, look at the people he's had. Morrissey's become mega now. JKS, the joke is for real in his team, is supposed to be the fourth best player. JKS. Like, the people were trying to make teams with him as one and two. Like, when he joined fucking Complexity, he was getting paid to be like one of the best players in the world. So, like, it is actually just like, I don't even blame Nico for it. I just think he's had a mixture of some of the most unlucky circumstances ever. And then also, even though it sounds weird, the worst spot to be in is to be like the third best team, but not the one that wins the tournament. Like, I'd rather, much rather be the one that, you know, like, I'm the fifth. Like, pretty sure I'd rather be outsiders than G2 in that sense. Like, at least I win the major. Yeah, I'm not as good overall, but I get that one moment where it's like, yeah, like, he never got that. And then the last thing is on the Monacy angle. That's also a huge detail to me, because if you go and look historically, usually those super sick young players like that, it takes them years to get to a title, to the right team. This guy in year one's already won a really big title. That could be so key for his development. And make him not fucked up and think you have to be super selfish all the time and actually be a team player and stuff. Like, you can trust the team benefit. And then on the, I'll tie the 2 points together finally, which is the reason it could be really cool, in my opinion, is because if Nico and Monacy can actually be both amazing like this, what a fucking sick 1-2 punch that would be. Because that's the one thing, unless maybe you go back to the days when he had Guardian way back in FaZe, that's one thing you haven't had with Nico. And the joke to me is, when you look at how good Monacy could get, that could be for real, like, if he becomes like a Simple, that's like Nico and Simple playing together. Imagine how fucking amazing that would be. So, and look, I'm sure some of the G2 element might be like your honeymoon effect or whatever. No one knows how they'll do it the next LAN, but they looked fucking amazing at this LAN. Like, the difference is they didn't even just win games. They had some games where they just dusted people completely off and looked awesome. And also, the map pool just looks like it's not even the same team. Like, they could win on almost every map at this tournament. Like, they actually look super strong on some maps. So, yeah, like, if you're someone who's been waiting all year like I have, mate, I've been waiting forever to see this G2 lineup actually be good. Like, if people don't know, I was one of the people who did fight against, look, it's not the hooks angle, but I did fight against the idea that because they failed the major, like, it's just a shit lineup, like, toss it in the bin. Like, look at these pieces. Like, it actually, I was always the other way. What never made sense to me is, it's not like, well, they weren't good, so of course they didn't make it. It's the other way around. It's like, I can't conceive how they didn't make the major. I don't know how, like, they weren't doing a better result at the four finals in Blast. To me, this lineup was always mad underwhelming. Like, look how fucking talented they are. So, I think this is way cooler angle. Yeah, I'm with you. I think this is a mega point.
I think also, one point you brought up, that was, I think it was like spot on, like, the map pool was like, since Hooksy came, I think the map pool changed a lot, which I think is kind of healthy. Like, I know they just like lost big time on Ancient, but Hooksy definitely made them play more Ancient and Vertical than they were comfortable with.
Oh, for sure,
before,
yes.
I think. And even Monet was also a beast on Vertical before, so that probably also has something to do with it. But I definitely think that the map pool like improved significantly, and they still have the maps they were good on before. They were really good on Dust. They're still good on that, but that's obviously out now. But also the Inferno was good before, but they're still having really good cheesers on Inferno, and it looks like they like maintained the good things on the maps they already had, they were good on, and then they like brought their weaker maps up. So I think that's like something that's really important for that team for sure.
We should just segue this into your point then, Maui.
Yeah. So what I was bringing to the table for what's good in the CS space is that I think Hooksy's calling itself is something that people should be really happy about, because obviously there was a lot of contention when he was brought into the lineup. Like, was that Copenhagen Flame seemed kind of a fluke, and was Hooksy actually providing anything? Because you kind of look actually at some of the Copenhagen Flames individuals, Xiphon, Yabby, I mean, Nikodaz, and I think a lot of people gravitated towards how good they were. But when I actually had that, like, HLTV expert piece about is Hooksy a good fit for G2, I really actually went back and studied a lot of their games, and I liked how sort of multidimensional their approach could be, how dynamic they could be on certain maps, how much freedom it felt like individuals had, but how it would always factor into the greater picture. And that, I felt like that was exactly what G2 needed, and I have put on record myself saying that, even though I at the time doubted could Hooksy perform as an individual, I think that his individual level is decent enough now that it's not like you're actually always hindered or hamstrung by some guy that is playing just so badly. I mean, if you look at some of the other teams, which I'm sure we'll get to, that failed at this tournament, some of their in-game leaders or some of their individuals actually played much worse than Hooksy did. But what I really do love about Hooksy's calling style is that it reminds me a lot of Prime 2021 Navi, where two things can happen at the map on the map at the same time. It's like they can have multiple objectives and they can complete those objectives at the same time. Whereas a lot of teams, they have that more kind of structured, singular approach where it's like, we want to get banana control, so we're just going to do this on the map. But once Hooksy and once G2 have a little bit of map control, they start really playing with their opponents. And that's why you could see their T sides actually working so well, that oftentimes they're going to catch a player that's in rotation or the other team just doesn't know what's going to come next. And I'm not going to cite this one clip, but like someone posted on Reddit G2's calling. And it was like this round where they went towards B apartments on Mirage and then they started going underpass. And then Nico just headshots everybody coming out of underpass. I think he killed a guy towards maybe connector and then a guy towards catwalk or something like that. And I was like, I think that's actually a time where Hooksy called badly because he made Nico do something like that. But they do that a lot where they just make it very uncomfortable for opponents, even though that was probably the worst round to demonstrate it. There are other rounds where they were able to actually push people around and make them just confused. Their opponents were just confused.
What do you think, Blameth?
I think one important thing to mention about that, like Hooksy's stats, because I think people over-exaggerate those statistics sometimes. Like, his stats were kind of like funny in the beginning when he had like 3 kills in 1 map or whatever it was, but there's also a difference between being an IGL who always have to be the sacrificial lamb in the team, and I think he is definitely putting himself in that position way more than pretty much any other IGL there is out there, maybe for except for like Kerrigan or someone like that. Like, I would say, like, if there's a match where he consistently does that, but obviously not to the stupid extent we're just running and die, but obviously like does it so someone can get a trade. I'm also expecting the four other guys to play better, you know, like it will make Nico play better, it will make Monesi play better, that they have the IGL who's always going to run in first when he sees the opportunity. And I think that's also a big part of why his statistics is so bad, you know, like people say that, but I don't think it's not as bad as, you know, some people make it up to, because you have to like also think about the roles and stuff. He has been taking all the bad positions on CT sides as well, all the leftover positions. So yeah, I just think that, yeah, the point was good, and I definitely agree with the Hooks' calling. Seems good. Also, like, call it like the chaos playstyle, like, you know, hitting multiple places at the same time. I think like that's kind of the meta right now in Counter-Strike, that more than one thing can happen on the map at the same time, so it's harder for the CTs to, you know, be able to defend it, because you cannot stand, it's hard for you to predict two places on the map where there's gonna come a lot of T's to you, you know, so you will always be weak on one of the sides. So yeah, I think that's just like kind of meta right now how they play.
Yeah, the thing is, if you remember, Maui, it was actually on this show, that episode where we had Peter, where he did make that outrageous statement that like Hooks is better than Karn or whatever, which spoiler, he definitely isn't. Like, that was just fucking, that was just copium like a motherfucker back then. What he meant was, like, give him a break, he's a good player, and give him a chance in G2, which is like, that's a totally fine one. The joke is, Peter actually, like, sort of presciently thought he was on Hot Take Point Made, our other show, which you can see on this channel right now, Last Free Nation CSGO, next episode coming up soon. Because the joke is, that would have been a great Hot Take Point Made fucking hot take, wouldn't it? Like, that's outrageous statement. But I sort of do agree in general, though. Like, if you remember my point I made all the way back then, funny enough, everyone's picked up on this one now, mate. Everyone copied it, like Reddit always does. I was the first person to point out, like, you can think Hooksy's as shit as you want, but even from that first tournament, did anyone see Monesi's numbers? Like, mate, he's just become like twice as good, and that's just continued the whole time Hooksy's been there. So I even said back then, when you're as bad a fragger as Hooksy is, the key question I have is, can you make your other players even better though? Because with the lineup he has, like I say, if JKS is your second worst player, fucking hell, you have an all-star team, mate. Like, everyone's good, everyone can frag. So in my opinion, like, actually, that is the element that I think can justify to some degree Hooksy being in the team. Everyone else, when they've done well at the first beginning of when he joined, and then this tournament, everyone did well, every single player. So, like, all I'll say is this. You can have a player, like, Nico could pop off, of course, he's done it in bad teams. Monesi could have a pop-off game. Every single player in your team doesn't do well unless they're actually understanding the game plan, position, have comfort, communicate. Like, that is, in my opinion, you can infer the IGL did his job there. And one thing I'll say on the calling as well, this is exactly where it'll be a really counterintuitive point to fans, because you might think I'm doing the opposite argument, right? Loads of the T rounds, especially on maps like Mirage, Dude, they would just get the opener every single time. Every fucking time they'd be up 5v4, 5v3. Sometimes the CTs just save three men like you do when you're just out of the game completely, right? That you might think that's just like, well, that's just his team shooting people in the head. It's like, they're not like four times better than the opponent. They are fighting against the equivalent world-class players. That actually implies you're calling a really good game. You're getting the spots for your openers to happen, getting them the right duel that they need. You're following up correctly. That actually, to me, that did imply like the rest of the team playing very well, part because of this. And as you say, the T sides in this tournament were just a revelation. They were fucking amazing.
I also think that from the outside, the atmosphere in the G2 team looks very good. And how I noticed it is that every time someone asked Hooksy in interviews how he made Monizy play better, because Monizy has been playing really good since Hooksy came, he never takes the credit. I think that's like a big part of like showing a healthy environment in the team. He doesn't feel the pressure of having to take the credit. I think if a guy is like really feeling the pressure, then he might go out and say, yeah, that's because I told him to do this, or I'm helping him with this, or I'm really focused on making him play good. But he never does that. He always goes out and say that, like, oh, it's his own like achievement, like it's because he's working hard and that kind of stuff. I think also that it goes the same way that I see every time someone asks about Hooksy, like they're like really fast at like praising him. And when the people ask the other players, like, why did you win the game? They start like really fast, like answer, like, who's had great calls? Like, he's doing a great job. Like, I think that shows like an incredible healthy environment. And yeah, there had been like some scenarios earlier where it looked like they didn't have the best environment, sure, you know, when they were losing, of course. But yeah, I just think that it looks like a way more healthy team right now.
As opposed to, like, if anyone's watched this, as soon as I point this out, it's going to ruin Simple for you completely. So of course I'll do it. Fuck him. Right. If you ever see Simple interviews, here's how a Simple interview works. If Na'Vi did badly and lost and Simple thought they shouldn't lose, here's how he phrases it. Like, yeah, we've got a lot to work on. You know, some of my teammates made a mistake. Like, here's the joke for you guys. Right, Simple saying like "we need to talk" is like your girlfriend saying "we need to talk." What she means is we need to talk about you and how you're fucking up everything I want done. Like, it isn't to go like it is when I just like, yeah, exactly. That's like another little clue from the interviews. You can, there's a freebie for you guys. Come on then, Maui. What are your thoughts on the Hooksy topic?
Well, on top of that, I mean, one thing that I really liked, especially when they played a team like Vitality, is that they just throw the weaker players into the blender a lot more. That's something that I think a lot of teams, when I watch them play, it feels like you could come up with this game plan that targets like one weak player on the opposing team. But I've heard a lot of interviews where coaches or IGL say, you know, it's pro CS, like we don't really just target somebody. But like Hooksy definitely just targeted Apex. Like, I think he structured so many rounds on their nuke T side against Vitality to try to like do a lower hit or to try to go ramp. They basically tried making sure that Apex was always having to work in a round. Like, I don't think Majisk really got to even see that much action in that game other than when he was rotating. So instead of going at the guy that you expect to get one or two every single time, you go with the guy that sometimes is good for zero, sometimes good for one. And I think that's just something that's way more pragmatic than what a lot of people are doing when they're calling, because they want to have a more well-rounded approach. But I've seen Hooksy just have really solid game plans that have been executed very well.
Sure. Right, I'll do my point now, because my point, I can segue it perfectly from what I just said about the G2 roster. That, to me, it was always baffling how underwhelming that G2 roster was. Like, I actually even look at that team on paper and I genuinely think to myself, like, they really didn't qualify to a major with this team. Like, how? Like, you can just trip over it. Like, the joke is, if I told you tomorrow, right, we're going to make like a mixed team, you got Nico, Monizy, it's like, you don't even need the other three names. We've got a chance, right? We should at least have a shot at some of these games. Like, and if the other piece is then a Hunter and JK, what are we doing wrong? So, along those lines, I actually think, like, you know, back in the day when FaZe was the super team, when Equal Guardian, so we famously used to call Mouse Sports poor man's FaZe, because they were like an international team with Sonny and Robs and Oscar, but they were like really good, but like not quite the level of the FaZe ones. That's why they were poor man's FaZe, right? Poor man's G2 in that sense is fucking OG. It's an X's team. Because I also, by the way, the whole time they've had this lineup with Neofrag, Dexter, and Fiku in this Nexa roster, the whole time I've been watching that team going, how is this team not winning more games? Have you had a look at these fucking players? Like, for like a tier two team, these players are way overqualified. Like, again, if I told you you're going to have a tier two team and we'll start with there's Dexter, I already should be winning some games off that. He's going to solo win some games. Then you chuck in Neofrag, by the way, one of the most blatantly obvious tier two players that should be at the top level. And then all spoiler, you already had Flames, who was just there, like, marinating, developing over the... Like, this team should have had way more upsets previously. I can't believe they didn't get through that phase at the major. I saw, like, stats-wise, they were all fragging out, and they just didn't win the games. Like, something just went wrong in the server. So, actually, I'm not as shocked as other people. Look, I never thought they'd go to the semi-finals of this Blast. But, like, for example, I did think they would beat Heroic in the opener. I was like, mate, that's a really risky game for you, Heroic. You just lost your best player, and you're playing basically, like, a super mix of players. Like, and also, they clearly play, like, around the stars. Like, I actually think it's really cool, basically. Like, my point is that OG's talent finally came together. Like, this should be a team with, like, the ultimate fucking chance to at least have a puncher's chance in the game, if you know what I mean, against a lot of teams. Because think about this, right? This is one area I think fans always miss, like, how teams work in Counter-Strike. Just because OG in the rankings is way down doesn't mean the players are way down. Like, I actually think skill-wise, this team's more skilled than some of the top 10 teams. Like, there's plenty of squads, I think, man for man, they might be more skilled than. They just didn't get it to come together before, whereas at this event looked awesome.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like, I think that if you just look at the players, they have players that can, like... Basically, all of the players could go to, like, the same caliber team or better team, you know, if OG decided to disband or something. That's also why I think someone from their team had, like, an interview before the tournament saying, like, this tournament will predict, like, or, like, kind of, like, show what's going to happen to this roster for next year, because if we just bomb out last again, then, like, something must happen, I think someone said, or something. So, yeah, I just think that they have some really strong individuals. I also think Neoflex is a really strong, like, aggressive rifler that the team needs, and they have Flames on top of that as well. So, just a lot of, like, talent, even in the rifling area, and obviously Dex has a great AWP as well. So, yeah, they should be, like, a team that makes upsets as well.
My one concern with OG is probably how they called in this tournament to actually get to the semifinals, because in the group stage, they actually had the best... In the group stage of all the teams there, they had the best round win percentage for T-sides, but then once they went to the playoffs, they had the worst T-side in the entire playoffs. And when I watched them in the group stage, what I noticed is that it felt like Nexa was taking a lot of shortcuts with how he wanted to call, where he basically, on Inferno especially, just started five-manning probably... almost sometimes like 30 seconds into a round. Like, they default for just a very brief amount of time, and then they would just group up and try to go somewhere together. And he didn't really, like, test the map too much. And it feels like right now OG have had so many difficulties in the recent months winning those kinds of games that they're kind of taking what I saw with Mouse. When Mouse kind of went from, I think it was, what, Dallas to Cologne, they had this big shift in how they played, where instead of spreading out all the time, instead of defaulting for like a minute and a half, they started just grouping up after 45 seconds in a round, then just hitting a bomb site, and it worked. But Mao has actually built out their playbook and added all these little tricks, all these other ways to actually sequence around. But then with OG right now, it felt like they kind of took that same shortcut where they just wanted to group very early in rounds. And I think the teams in the group stage were just honestly confused that the five dudes were running at them within 45 seconds in a round. And I think that's something that's going to come back to bite them unless Nexa and the rest of the team can develop their T-side structure a little bit more.
Okay. Put it this way, I will now make a joke, but the reason I'm saying it in a really awkward way, Blameth, is we're all going to just keep it really chill as the response to the joke, so that no one's feelings get hurt. It's just a joke. The joke goes out there, drifts away. We're all like, we're like the mountain, they're the clouds, and they just float on by. There's nothing to worry about. Because here's the thing, essentially, the reason why I thought OG should be way better than they are is the same reason why I actually thought, and they didn't in the end, but that Heroic should actually have a chance to do something at this LAN. Because again, like, yeah, it's not the best team on paper, but like, you add in Config, we know how skilled he is, so the joke obviously is, and historically with Config, you've always got a fighting chance. Again, just keep it calm, just keep it chill, it's not nothing, no, it's just, you know, just put it out there, it's gone, it's easy, no problem. So right, now let's move on, we can all just move on together as a unit, it was all together and everything that we're saying, on to the bad points now. So BlameF, what is your bad point? What don't you like at the moment?
My bad point right now is, I think the map pool right now for me personally can be, and I know like it can be argued against, of course, so maybe it's a fun point, but I think the map pool right now for me is a little bit flawed in the sense that I think there's too many maps that for me is like a question mark, and I'm all about like getting new maps in and rotating maps. I think that's a good thing. I think there needs to be like some sort of change in Counter-Strike, but I think right now we have like, obviously we have a Anubis, which is a new map. It will have updates. So I think that's kind of like, that should be kind of like the new thing in Counter-Strike right now. But then we have Vertigo, which I personally think is a boring map. Like, it's just so much like spamming through smokes, not like a lot of like fun map control to fight for. I would say the execute's very boring, not very inspiring. Like a lot of the same stuff. Like the map is like nothing new has really happened on that map in a long time, which has like been changing the meta. And then also we have Ancient, where it's like they did so many changes in so many like so many couple of days that for us in Astralis, I know like it didn't hit everyone because but we were playing a tournament which used those changes. So like the first day we were like sitting and we had like a long team talk after a bad practice day and changed a lot of stuff. The next day the mollies, like the bug mollies over middle doesn't work,
Right.
and we had like a tournament like the same day we had to play a map or something on Ancient, and we're like, wait, what happened? What if we're gonna play Ancient? We just changed all those things to like put pressure middle from T spawn and stuff. And then the next day when we're playing the another match, then all of a sudden they changed the spawns, so like the T's could just run out fast, like take all the map control so fast, you know. So I think it's good that the meta tried to shift more towards the T side of the meta, but I think there's too many maps for me right now. That's like kind of a little bit of a question mark where I think this like is it gonna have more changes? Is Ancient all of a sudden is gonna change the spawns a little bit more, or what's gonna change now since it's hard for CTs to fight on middle now and all that? So yeah, for me personally, just the map pool right now is a bit too many like flaws and questions mark.
It's hard to, I mean, I think Dust2 was such a known quantity, and I know that you guys were pretty proficient on Dust2. Like, I remember you guys taking down Vitality at the showdown, for example, on that one, which was a really impressive win. So I can see why you say that. I do think that with Ancient and Vertigo in the pool at the same time, it's kind of like Valve is trying to just have their hands on everything a little bit, where I think we know. Like if we look at some of the other ones, Mirage, Inferno, I think everybody's okay with those being in the pool. That's like really a player. There's no real great arguments against those other than them being stale. And then Overpass, kind of a different look. And then I guess the ones you kind of mentioned, Anubis. I think that's one though that's gonna like I think people are starting to figure it out. I think at the World Finals, people actually had a good variety of approaches to it. And I kind of get why this point works with Ancient and Vertigo, but I think Anubis in some ways just feels already a lot better than those other two. So I'm not against it being in the pool. I guess just the period of transition that we're in, unfortunately, is just kind of like you're one of the people that has to face that blame F because whereas for us, it kind of feels like, okay, well, nothing's happening, but you guys were playing that CCT and having to work through all those changes. Like the fact that now Ancient the T's can get out mid kind of faster, but they don't have that Molly. It changes a lot of the meta. And to see that live happen in a tournament is, you're getting the short end of the stick, I'll put it like that.
Yeah, for sure. But it's just, I think I also agree. Like, I think Anubis looks good. Like, I think it's a good map. It has like the map control to fight for. It has like you can execute on sites. Like, it has like all of those things that a good map has. But I just think like when there's a new map in, I don't think there should be like a lot of changes on the other maps at the same time because
Oh,
I
yeah.
do think
Yes.
at that point it might. I think you always want to have the best team winning Counter-Strike, at least from if you ask me, and it can give like a little bit of a random element if like a team has to sit and figure out three maps that has like a meta change all of a sudden, you know, so or like two maps and then like a map that's like at the random with the displays and stuff. So yeah, I just think that it's a lot at the same time to kind of like overcome as a player if those are not your strong maps already.
Actually, I'll butt in again here that I think that it was a bit of a shocker to see what they bring in Anubis, they change the M4, they change the AWP, they change parts on Ancient, and it's kind of all at the same time. And yeah, in a competitive space, that is too many things happening at once. Like it feels like it's always actually in the past been a little bit more gradual than that.
I'll actually say, I the key thing is I said on past episodes I'd like played Anubis, but I'd never obviously never seen a pro game on it. So I always wait for the actual matches because I think the difference between playing like a matchmaking game and pro like this just it's not even vaguely the same. Like certain maps are just garbage in matchmaking compared to real pro play, whereas there are amazing maps in pro play. So to me, I actually have to say, for the first ever tournament to use Anubis, this was one of actually the better maps, like right out the gate that I've seen in years. Like, if people don't know, even classics that I know some people don't like them, but I do, like Overpass. It took a long time before people figured out how you play Overpass the way we do now, and like all the. A lot of people hated these maps when they all came out. By the way, maps like Cobblestone, everyone was hating on these like a motherfucker. This actually looked playable right out the gate, even with teams with stand-ins and people playing it first time literally ever in a match. Like, I actually thought it was pretty banger in that sense. Like, it actually seemed like it had potential. But I definitely agree, though. Like, put it this way, I am one of those people. I hate the Vertigo and Ancient, and I was never even that big a fan of the Nukery work. It's just that in the modern world, I have to negotiate for something. So, like, I guess Nuke can stay. It's had enough good games now. The meta's changed enough, whatever. But I do think it's funny the way Blamef did it, though, because he actually did the classic move. I know he used to be an in-game leader, and that's exactly how all in-game leaders think. They're always like, yeah, like the sentence could just be like this. I think we should remove square brackets my permaban, and then we should bring back square brackets my favorite old map, home map. Like, they all just do that, like, to a man. So magically, all the teams that are great at Overpass, they don't think Overpass sucks, believe it or not. They think it's a really tactical map, you know. They've gone to, yeah, like, it's the same with them all. So I will just say, it is interesting that Blamef's opinions were that, because one, if anyone remembers Complexity was all the normal maps. It was like Nuke, Mirage, Inferno, Dust 2. That was, it was none of those maps we just listed there. It was all the fucking classic ones that everyone knows. And in Astralis, it was mainly that, although I will say, it is interesting that he actually called out Ancient there, Maui. Because at one point this year, Astralis was forcing Ancient. Like, a motherfucker, it was one of the best, like, actual chances you guys had in a series to get going. So, fair play that you actually did call out for once a map that you guys were good on. That's legit. Okay. I'm with you.
It's so funny you mentioned that, like, because I remember back in the days when I was playing Complexity and had that map pool where we're like, we only played, but that was the only map we could beat the tier 1 teams. I was like, Dust and Nuke and Mirage. Like, that was the main maps we beat people on, also when we won the Blast tournament online. And I remember you went out and said, like, in a short video on YouTube or something, like, why do people keep picking those maps and leaving them open against them? And I was like, don't say that. Like, I don't want people to listen to that. Exactly, like, because yeah. I was like, this guy's onto us, because, like, no one other teams did it. Like, other teams just kept picking the map because they thought they were good on it, and they just thought that we could just beat them because they're a lower tier team. But, like, it was just so nice to us that people kept picking, like, our comfort maps, and we didn't end out on a lot of weird maps back then because people just underestimated us, maybe.
Yes.
But yeah, it was just so funny. I just remember that when you said that.
No, put it this way. It's actually one of the reasons I think why, like, aside from all the other factors, how good the team is, it's actually one of the reasons I think FaZe was the number one team, because the best maps are fucking Inferno and Nuke. Like, everyone plays that. Everyone's going to let you play that. You can always get, you might even get your best map as a third map. Like, that's the dream to have, like you say, the maps that everyone just plays and lets you play, of course.
Yeah, but I also I just want to say, like, I'm just happy they didn't ban Mirage, you know, remove that from the...
Oh, yeah, of course.
So, like even though I have to give up...
It's also specifically for you personally. That's, like, your best map ever, right?
Oh, I mean, it is for me personally, because it hasn't been, like, Astralis' best map or anything like that, but it's definitely, like, always been my favorite map, you know. So it's just the map I was, like, built on in those, like, lower-tier teams I played in before, so, yeah, I'm fine with giving away Dust if I can...
Okay, you'll trade that, okay. Right, Maui, what is your bad point?
Mine is... Shoot, where did I put it down? Okay, my bad point is Vitality's CT sides, actually. Because I actually think their T sides are fine right now. I think that Apex is actually doing a decent job when it comes to calling on those. I think they actually have figured out some of the structure that they want to play with. I think they actually usually... I guess not super recently, but with kind of the history of this Vitality lineup, I've seen them pull off numerous T-side comebacks, but now I think all of the flaws of some of the individuals on Vitality are very much so being exposed, and I think that you could switch some of the roles around, but like, it's really hard to watch this team knowing that, kind of how I mentioned earlier, that they can just target people like Apex. Like, the way that Apex plays the A ramp, the way that he plays ramp on Nuke, that's just kind of a nice coincidence, that's same spot name, but I think, like, he was in particular incredibly weak in this. And also another thing is that when they played Anubis and we had to see Sphinx play on that B site as an anchor, I think that's kind of one of his weaker spots. And I just think that right now this team still feels like Zywoo and who is going to show up. And Majisk is a guy that has thankfully been doing really well for them, but it feels like he's very limited because he's generally in a lot of these anchor spots, so he's not one of the guys that is always having the most impact. But when you actually look at some of the discrepancies in terms of statistics for CT side of really any top 20 teams, Zywoo versus the rest of his team is just, like, it's on another level. Like, there's no other real top team right now where it's incredibly obvious that one guy has to just shoulder the entire burden. You look at even, Blamef has Device now. I mean, you have Simple, who has usually a couple, like, Bit's actually kind of come back into form a little bit there, but you have, like, there's no real second guy for them right now, and there's definitely no rotator player that's playing that well for the team. And that's just something that we thought Sphinx was going to do, but as it turns out, he's a lot more one-dimensional than we would have hoped for. It's like I don't know. I have to give Snappy so much credit, I guess, because they made this guy look like a top five rifler in the world, and now for me, Sphinx is like just a slightly above average pro.
I think they have done like the moves on the map on CG size that theoretically should make them like a better team, because I do think like Apex gave up, like he was playing a lot of star positions before, and he gave all that up to like to give to Sphinx, I think, to make him comfortable in those CG sides. So I think it must also be a little bit of a question mark for them, because I feel like they must be sitting and saying that in theory we have done as much as we can. Of course, maybe Apex is not the best anchor in the world, but there's a lot of other teams that also has like the IGL as an anchor, you know, like that's, it's pretty normal. So in theory, I think they have done a lot of those moves that is required to make the roster work. Yeah.
Yeah, I have to say, this is actually one area I'll give Maui credit. Like, he actually did nail basically exactly the moment where you sell high on Sphinx. Like, around Pro League was when he was, like, still looking just good. And he was like, right, the logic at the time was, if he goes a bit better, like, towards the end level, then they become even better and they become a world-beating team. He didn't. He regressed and he went down. And the last few months have been dreadful. Like, and crucially, this is the key thing as well. Everyone only ever talks about the T-side. It's on CT side, even. That's the position where you're just using your skill. Like, he actually looks out of sorts on some of the maps. Like, he just, it's, and even worse, there are some maps where, this is why I wonder how they set him up with Snappy and then Maui, because sometimes it also looks like when he has bad games, like, he almost, like, plays a bit, like, disconnected from the team or too selfishly or something. Like, that makes me think in the other team, they really just gave him everything. They just gave him every best spot. And so, like, it's why actually eye test itself can be tricky, because the eye test did check out for that player. I'm telling you, if you go back and watch the POV, it's just the gunfights he's taken. It looks mega. His mechanical skill are really top notch. He looked like a player, like his aim's mega. But I have to say, the way he's fit in this team, here's the problem if you're someone like Sphinx. On a team like Ents, even if the players are good as your teammates, they will give you everything because they just want like the chance to win. In a team like Vitality, right, they're never, unless you're Zimu, you're never really going to get everything. Like, people like Magus, they have their own ego, you know. They've been the top of the world. They won championships. They're not going to, like, they're not really going to make it like it's you two guys and we're just shit. They're still going to take positions they somewhat want to do or think they can do. Like, so it's way more of a negotiation now, and they clearly have not figured out whatever the problem is. Like I said, Matt, this is how you know in the modern day people don't write, like, bad written articles, because someone by now would have done a whack pun of, like, can Vitality solve the riddle of the Sphinx? Like, that's exactly what, just two US probably crying to sleep now knowing I've just taken their brilliant headline for their article in 2 months, you know, like, they were scooped here. Because I think this is another one, I have to admit, it just baffles me. Like, I understand it's hard, the dynamics of people and the negotiation, like, everyone has to, like, share the positions and the resources and stuff, but there has to be, I'm certain there has to be a way to, like, cut this Gordian knot, Maui. There has to be a way to make it work. They haven't yet, but there has to be. There just has to be.
Yeah,
go on, Blame.
Yeah, if you have something to say.
I'll go ahead.
Fucking hell, too polite. Right, go on, okay. Maui, come on.
Yeah. Well, then I think what's really concerning is that, yeah, they did shift some of the spots around for Sphinx, but, like, I looked at, actually, map by map, his stats, and just kind of thought of the spots that he has on these maps, and, like, his CT side is, so far, the worst on Anubis, but it's only one map. But then his second is Overpass, is where his CT side is really bad, and he's the A rifler, and that's supposed to be your best rifler. You're supposed to, like, when actually this lineup formed, I thought Sphinx Zywoo would be a sick duo defending the A site, but actually, as a matter of fact, his rating on the CT side of Overpass against top 30 is 0.86, and, like, that is just, like, of the worst, if not the worst, for A riflers in the top 15. Like, I don't know any team that can work with an A rifler that's performing that badly. And then also, the way that he's performing on his best map, Inferno, like, he's playing B, he's playing, like, banana with Apex, and the amount of times I see them lose B is unbelievable. Like, so he's getting a good rating on that map, but it's also, like, this is where I think stats lie a little bit. Like, the amount of times I see them actually lose B is very high, despite the fact that he is putting up good numbers there. And I think that's the dynamic between him and Apex is just not there quite yet, because as we kind of remember back to when this lineup was formed with the Danish French combination, they put Majisk and Dupree towards A, they put Apex and Masuda towards B, and then they just kind of went one for one Masuda with Sphinx. And I actually think the Masuda Apex duo was better. I think they actually did better at Banana. They had more cohesion, and they were actually locking down Banana more frequently. But I don't know what it is between Spinks and Apex, but they're just not finding that sort of tandem when they're working on that side of the map.
Okay.
I wanted to say that, like, I think if I had to give my take on why I think he might be playing worse in this team that he doesn't enter without knowing it, of course, I think that on CT sides, there is a big difference going from playing maybe, like, I wouldn't say he's played with a support orb before, but like a more supportive orb and more passive orb, to then going to play with one of the best players in the world. Like, because when you're rotating and playing the spots he is playing with his orb all the time. And there's a big difference between if the every time freeze time when you're playing with a passive orb, you're saying what you're doing as a rifler. There's a big difference with the orb saying what he's doing, and then you have to adapt to him every single round. So that's definitely something that you have to be able to overcome or like be able to adapt to in order to, like, still play very good. I'm not saying that's why he has 0.86 rating or whatever on CT Overpass, but I'm saying like that's definitely a big change that might like hit you when that changes. And then I think on T sides, I think in ends they had like a lot of, I would say, mega aggressive riflers. It's easier to pick your fights when you have those mega aggressive riflers, because you can choose to go first if you feel like that's good, but you can also choose to go last because someone else will just go first, you know. Like, I think in a team with more structure, maybe that you don't get to pick your fights as much as you do in a team where everyone is just like wanting to run in and like, hey, like when we're running, we're all five just going on one flash, and that kind of like aggressive style that Inns had back with Spinks, I think. So I think maybe on T sides, he has to like think a little bit more about, you know, like taking the right fights or like on the timing of taking the fights, whereas before he could kind of like pick it a little bit easier, I think.
Obvious joke that writes itself there. The T sides aren't snappy anymore. So there you go. Right, here's my bad point aside from that joke, which was, this is another moment. Whatever, they can't all be good, just like Astralis lineups. So, right, whatever, that was low hanging fruit. That was just there, whatever, it's all good. Here's the thing though, this is another example, Maui, of when I actually sold high at the right moment. Because my bad point is, I'm actually surprised with like the way that they lost, but I'm not actually surprised that Outsiders was last place at the World Final. Like, unfortunately, even though they won the major, and people will know I enjoy watching the team, I've bet on them as an underdog loads of times, there's a reason I bet on them as an underdog, guys. Like, I love them as like an outside chance to, they're not a world beater, that's my bad point. I think, unfortunately, the mixture of the fact that at the major, they got an incredible route opened up for them to win that championship. They didn't have to play the big dogs in the world, and then they just went to a land that was super stacked with all the top teams, and they didn't win. They weren't looking that great, actually. I do think that was an unusually bad performance. Like that last map they had against G2 was ridiculous. I doubt they'll ever be that bad again. But even so, I don't think the peak of Outsiders is, I don't think they have a chance to be number one in the world. I think, for me, a good position for Outsiders would be to be like, say, fifth or sixth, and just be like, they are before the major, like an outside chance. They're good upset team, catch like a big name at the right time, you upset them, catch a team that can't respond to how GM calls, get them, have a game where Flit and Fame and GM pop off. Yeah, because that's the last thing I'll also throw in. The numbers from the major, look, Fame can do that. Flick can do it. GM's never going to do those numbers every tournament, guys. It was something like 1.30 rating at the major. Like, he's not simple, guys. Is everyone forgetting the last 3 years? Like, it's just like a good orper. He's not some superstar. So to me, the reason I put it as a bad one is because I do think a lot of people want to believe that, like, the winner of the major is the best team in the world. Therefore, you know, like, they should win it. I actually think that might end up being the only big tournament they win. That's my take.
It did feel like, oh, okay, yeah, go, Blame F. I took the last one.
Yeah, I had to go first this time. Yeah, I think that I tried to watch the games because I was also a little bit, obviously I was sitting playing these CCT tournaments, so I haven't watched all the games live, so I went back and tried to watch because I was also kind of surprised they were without last place. And I do think they tried to play the playstyle in this tournament that they did in the major, on the maps I watched at least. Like, they still tried to do those like chaotic rounds where they like attack multiple plays at the same time, or like attack a bomb out of Mirage while taking map control middle, or like all of a sudden they just switch their pace and like do like a B rush, or they did like a fast abs pop. So I do think that they tried to play the playstyle I think that they have been successful with, but yeah, it just didn't work. So I was also like a bit curious, maybe it's because people are a little bit more onto them, because they do have a very like certain playstyle that I think you can, maybe if you like study them enough, maybe like adapt to. So I don't know if it's because of that or whatever it is, but I definitely think that they, from what I saw at least, they try to do like those like gimmicky things they usually do.
It felt like the Outsiders' style, or at least some of the ways that they were winning their games, was held together by duct tape at the major, but that was just enough that it was able to
Okay,
accomplish the
just get over
victory.
the line.
Yeah, like if the way that they played at it, like they did all these things on T side, which were kind of like, again, I talk about how teams take shortcuts to, instead of having like a really well built out style, they'll kind of like, the biggest shortcut I think a lot of teams do is calling from spawn. Like that's kind of a really simple way to develop your T side playbook, is that instead of actually building out reactions, building out protocols, understanding the flow chart or the decision tree, like you just start putting just basic strats in. Like that's what Outsiders actually did at the major, and at the time we were praising it because they dry run really well, but I don't think they actually developed too many new T side strategies for this event. Or at least like maybe they were so unsuccessful that they were new, but I just thought they were bad because that's results oriented thinking, honestly. But I would say that with Outsiders, it still just feels like a team that, like, with in terms of individuals, you already said, Thorin, that James not going to perform that well anymore. But I also kind of feel like the only guy that I feel like is comprehensively an incredible player on this team is Flit. Like I think Fame was very good at the major. I think that he probably can be one of those players that will be adept in multiple situations. But I felt like what James did so well, and why I praised him before, is that he just somehow was able to put everybody in these situations that they were so good at, and it just kind of worked for them all in this like this harmony that it's very hard to like recapture that kind of music. So I would say that with Outsiders, it's going to be really impossible to see them also becoming a team that's going to be consistent. Like if people are going to say, like, you just can say, like, how do I want to frame this? Sorry. Like some people are probably going to look at this and see, like, well, what teams then can be sustainably great? I actually think that I would go out on a limb right now, and I think G2 could probably win a few tournaments next year. I think that looked like sustained success to me, but Outsiders looked a lot more like just things that worked for them, and then a very favorable bracket draw, but still culminating in them having one of the greatest achievements in Counter-Strike.
Oh, by the way, just before I forget, one thing we should have mentioned, I can't believe we all forgot it actually, also on the good point about Hooksy and G2. It's like, mate, I've said this in the past, so I'll do the little rundown for people who can't remember the list. There's a list I have in my mind, and I call them Counter-Strike heroes, because these are people where, this is my perspective, right? If you have a family tragedy happen, my actual basic assumption is if you want to skip the tournament and you even want to go and take time off and you can't play, that is totally a reasonable expectation. That is the normal of what I would expect to happen, right? So if you somehow decide to play or can play, and especially if you then win, you're just that's like some movie shit, mate. That's some heroic shit to me. So if people know the list, back in the day, Flusher had that scenario where I think it was his mom died, but like before some event when he was in Fnatic. It was when he was back in Fnatic, I think. Might have been in Cloud9, I might be wrong on that one. Then I know they had the one where Dupree's father, a couple of days before Katowice 2019, died. And by the way, he didn't just win that tournament. He had like some of the best numbers he ever had at a major. People might know Electronic had a child and went to a big LAN and did well. Alou had a child and went to the final of the same Katowice I'm talking about. Like, so the Hooksy storyline where he had his dad passed away a few days before the LAN, and he not only still played it but won the fucking tournament. Like, that's epic, man. That's just for that point alone, mad props for that. That's just some movie shit, man. Like, that's not the expectation at all. Like, if he'd have just said, by the way, I know, I think he'd already traveled or something, even if he'd have said, like, look, I'm gonna have to quit the tournament and have a stand-in, I wouldn't blame you. Like, that's one of the rare times where you can have that get out of jail free card. It's totally deserved, you know. Thought we'd just bring it up.
I mean, their run was really good. I mean, beating basically everyone that was considered a favorite
Yes.
at this. Yeah, I'm super impressive. I guess, I mean, to try to wrap the Outsiders thing a little bit more, like I also think that like Kicker himself individually has really just kind of failed to live up to the stature that he had on this lineup. And this kind of actually seems to have happened now multiple times with certain players on Jame-led teams, unfortunately, where like one guy gets the short end of the stick and the support player for Jame teams really suffers. Like really suffers. Think of Sanji, think of what Buster actually had to do, think of now what Kickert's having to do. And that's kind of where I think the Jame structure has its biggest flaw, is that he actually thinks one player should just be like a total bitch. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know where.
You know what the problem, Maui, is? Here's my problem. This will sound fucked up, but then whatever. It's all my opinion, so don't worry about it. Right? This is fucked up. I actually do low-key think if you have like Simple and Ziwu, I wouldn't mind a player like that who just farms with an SMG and gets orbs for Simple and Ziwu. I think they are so absurdly good, Maui. It might almost make sense to do it. My problem always was, Jim's just doing it for himself. Like, in that team, his whole thing was like, right, Sanji, you just don't get to, like, have real guns unless we're really rich. Otherwise, just give me one. Like, that is fucked up. Come on, like, even if it worked sometimes, like, you aren't simple, bro. Come on. What the fuck is this? Because it's true. You're right. Anyone who's the support player, it's like, your punishment must be more severe. Like, fuck, you know. It's already bad enough being a support player. Like, I'm already playing the worst roles. I don't even get guns to win the roles. Like, I'm in a bad spot and I have an SMG. Like, he has an AK. What am I supposed to do? Like, go on and finish your point if you had any more.
No, it's just really odd because Kickard was at one point, I think on this Vanguard lineup, I think he was the best player.
It was him and Jim. Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
it was.
They were really good. So it's just kind of funny how he can kind of just take it's like flowering player and just like stomp him into the ground.
Also, I will just say it is so fucked up because even as I say this, by the way, I'm going to keep doing it because I don't give a fuck, right? In the same way as, like, that famous, like, I'll give you an example. You know that famous story that, like, Zipnix is supposed to actually be called ZipX? We all just said his name wrong. Don't worry, he did tell us, like, a year or two in, like, that's actually wrong. And we were all like, we're going to keep doing it anyway because we've done it too long now. So sorry, like, so basically, similarly, right? This is fucked up, but this is what we all do. When we talk about outsiders, by the way, the world champions, guys, the team that just won the biggest tournament in Counter-Strike, it all goes like this, like, wow, Jim, like, he overcame all those interesting things in his career. Fame, a young up-and-coming player, where did they find him? One for the future. Flit, finally developing into a star, you know, like, maybe you reference Kicker. And then the joke is, you know that meme where it's like a group of people and there's some guy outside? It's like, that's all saying about them, like, Jim and Fame. And it's like, and then outside it just goes, hey, I'm Norbert. And then that guy reaches over with the big thumb, like, thumbs up. And then everyone goes back to, like, anyway, so outside, like, no one gives a, no one even cares, basically, that Norbert's alive or something. Like, no one knows what his role is. His job, as far as I can tell, Maui, is just don't suck. Like, that's it. Like, what's he even doing in this team?
What was weird?
I can't believe he's won a major, bro. I can't believe Norbert has a major and Nico's like, please. Please.
I know.
You know what I mean?
It is hilarious. I think what's funny about Norbert, actually, though, is that he didn't actually just become completely useless for them in the major run, because they actually changed some of... When they brought Fame and Norbert into the lineup, I think they gave Norbert a couple star roles, and then they realized pretty quickly, we're not going to win with Norbert being the star. Just gave Fame all those roles. Like, he was... Like, for example, in the beginning, Norbert was the A overpass rifler. Then they're like, let's put Fame there. And then it's just like... The team has a complete turn and they're just way better after that. So Norbert's just like, it's just, he's in a don't suck position.
Yes, exactly. At EsportsBet, they are always running their classic first time deposit bonus of 50% on up to 200 USDT. Right, let's move on then. Let's do the ugly points now. So BlameF, what is your ugly point?
My ugly point is that Na'Vi are struggling right now. Because, and I think there's obviously multiple points to that overall thing, but I think just a team that has those kind of players, like, it just hurts to see from the outside that they're struggling, because it does look like it's a lot of, like, outside factors that are, like, making them struggle right now. And yeah, it's just for me as well, like, Electronic is another rifler that I'm looking up to a lot, and I've been watching a lot of demos of, and just been like, kind of like a fanboy of him, or like, for a long period of time, even back when I was in, like, Heroic and Epsilon, like, all the way back then. So just, like, seeing the team suck, and I think, like, obviously not sucking because they're still, like, you know, like, getting to the big tournaments and all that, like, and like, still beating teams, but, like, compared to, like, the era and, like, when they were really good, I just think that team look, like, team play-wise doesn't look as good, and it looks like a bit confusing for them on the server and seeing who's doing what. And I think, like, Electronic is maybe overcompensating in some sense, like trying to do too much for what he's, like, capable of, maybe. Because, and I think also in an interview that someone, like Blade, I think, said, like, he needs more help on the server, like, Electronic needs more help on the server. And it does look like, for me sometimes, that Electronic's, like, the nades coming all the way up then and beat the guy running it first as well, and then, like, trying to, like, do this and do this and finding these openings and like creating the space at the same time and just doing all this, and it's kind of like hurting his individual performance. So yeah, I think just Avi as a team right now, they have like talent. They should be one of the best in the world, and maybe they are on the ranking, but I just think that they aren't really close to winning the titles right now. So yeah, just a little bit disappointing to see, because I think that how solid the team was, like people were even saying that like it must be the entire foundation of the team that are so incredible good, because they can swap an academy player in and still be the best in the world and all that stuff. So it's just kind of like sad for me to see that kind of maybe the foundation has crumbled a little bit over there in the Na'Vi camp.
I was thinking of picking this point up myself because I was pretty disappointed with what we've been seeing from Na'Vi lately, because there's no way I can really go into a tournament right now and actually pick Na'Vi. Like, usually there's a little bit of mystery in terms of like what is a team going to bring into a tournament, but as it's been for the last several now, I can't really enter a tournament and think like, yeah, Na'Vi have fixed their issues. And I'll bring up the NPL fact where it's like they're really kind of going into the dredges of their academy roster to try to find something now, because NPL to me wasn't even the best player from the academy team. I thought Hedrick was decidedly better, and in terms of stats he was, in terms of like what he was doing to carry that team when they were playing in the academy league, like Hedrick was the one that had to do everything. So then and picking NPL was like a really curious choice. And I think it's more to do with the roles. But then you look at how he performed, and it's like, man, if this is the future of what they're hoping to find for Na'Vi, then it's not a bright future at that. That's which is why I would just say, just put Hedrick in. It's a better player. It's a worse fit, but a better player, worse fit is kind of like the Yabby Heroic deal where he didn't play the same spots as Refresh, but he'll learn. And with the skills that he has already, he'll probably be able to find something with that. But on top of that, I do think that Electronic as an IGL has proven to not be a success. And what's even more frustrating is that Blade has now said in multiple interviews, we're not looking for a new captain. We're not looking for a new IGL. We're trying to make Electronic into our leader. And this team has just lost such a massive step in terms of their T sides and how there's just like a lack of coordination. Like, I mean, I think it was all summed up in that round that they played against Liquid, where they had 9 seconds. There was no just there's no reason they shouldn't have planted on B side overpass, and then they just didn't plant the bomb. It was like that's what I remember seeing from Na'Vi 3 years ago when they were making the transition initially to Boomich, and I was hoping that I was done with that kind of stuff, because that quality of CS is just like it's just not what you expect from a legacy org like Na'Vi.
Yeah, what I would say on this angle is this has actually been one of the things about Na'Vi. Like everyone forgets because they were so amazing in 2021 and the LANs, etc. Like earlier in the year, people forget this. They had the same lineup when they initially bought Britain, but online Bit wasn't the same player, wasn't as dominant, and especially at the time they used to be behind Gambit if everyone remembers. And at the time, that's why everyone flamed the fuck out of Blade and the team. Like it really was still like Simple had to like hard carry for them to win a bunch of those games or to even come like second or something. So I actually think if you look at Blade's career from talking to him, I did like a Stratbook episode on this on my YouTube channel if people have seen that one. Basically, Blade as an IGL and a coach, his one flaw in my opinion, because he is like a mastermind, he does have like his own total like vision of the game, and he obviously played like forever and seen every type of player and stuff. The problem is this: he actually has a problem a lot of England leaders and coaches sometimes have, which is in English we have a saying, Blame F, that goes, the perfect is the enemy of the good. Because the idea is if you strive too much for a certain type of perfection, it stops you doing what would be like just good, like it would just work, like you wouldn't need to. So I think sometimes he does almost make things too complicated. Because if everyone can remember back in 2019 when Blade joined as the coach and they transitioned to Boomich after having Zeus, that was when he made Simple be the Krieg player and brought Guardian back to be the AWPer. Now the reason he did that, this is where it's complicated philosophy, is his logic was if Simple gets his level to the absolute peak on the Krieg, then he'll just dominate the whole game because whenever he clutches, like he can be in the mid game. He was right. I get what he means. The perfect thing he was going for would actually be, in theory, the absolute best. But the point is, who the fuck else at that moment would ever be like, yeah, Simple, pass that up to someone else right now? Like, if you want to win the game now, you would just say, no, give him the AWP back. Like, let's just fucking go for it, do your best thing. So the problem is, basically, Maui, I don't think he will abandon this plan with this MPL guy. I actually think this really is the plan to bring this guy in. Like they brought Bit in gradually. It was the same way they had him on one map, and then they brought him in. And by the way, I actually think that's terrible, because I saw a lot of people argue, well, if you want to like build this player and his confidence and his experience at tier one, give him a chance. Like, well, then let him play the whole LAN. Like, what would the point? This is mad. They made that guy play the last map that they played, third map only of that series that they got eliminated on. Dude, I haven't even played map one and map two. Everyone's warmed up. Everyone's played the rest of the series. I'm already a fucking guy who's never played a tier one LAN. Like, that's too much pressure. Like, either put you in properly and, like, really give the guy a chance. And if he fails, okay. Or give him a chance. Like, put you in for, like, one map every now and then. I think that's too little, mate. Like, I think it's going to do this. It's just going to have a bad result. Like, you'd have to be superhuman to perform like that. Like, spoiler, go back and watch when Bit joined. When he was just coming in to play, like, one map instead of Flamey, he didn't drop 30 either. He used to just be, like, average as fuck. And people even were flaming him back then. A lot of people don't know that. They were like, why are we getting this guy? Why aren't we getting some, like, known Russian or Ukrainian player? Like, why are we trying this guy? So the thing to say is this. I'll give Blade a lot of passes and credit because he has found these players. He picked out Perfecto. He did make the Boomich work and win a fucking major. He did get Bit to be one of the best. So I'll give him time, but I think they're going to keep going this approach, mate. I don't think they saw this and they were like, right, scrap that. Like, as you say, I think he really believes like Electronic is going to be the ultimate IGL, whether we agree or not and whether we would do that. So the sad thing is, I've got a couple of points to make on this. One is on the whole thing of like the team. This is another area I find really tough to talk about as a player, because when we evaluate stars and players, most of the really great players are so absurdly good, you don't even have to mention what spots they play. Like, you put Nico in almost any team, he's going to be a really good player. Even if you put him in bad spots, he'll be, like, pretty good. The difference is, I genuinely think, from what I've seen this year, a lot of what made Bit amazing last year was how they used him, the spots they put him in, and how they supported him. Like, I think this year, when you've seen him on different spots, he just looks like half as good sometimes. He doesn't look like a player who knows everything and knows where they are. Like, remember when he used to play, like, Mirage and just CT push and always get, like, two kills on someone at, like, the perfect timing? That made you think, like, holy shit, can he, like, read the game as well? Like, I don't think he can, mate. I think he is, like, just a young up-and-coming player who's only had a year or so at the top. Like, he looks quite inexperienced when you watch him play. So when Bit fell away, by the way, Electronic's the IGL anyway, so the stats went down. And then on top of that, they had Simple's numbers went off. Like, you can't win like that. Like, if people remember, at the end of last year, when Na'Vi was super dominant, every year, if you went on this, every event, sorry, on the stats, they would have, like, three of the top 10 players. And Na'Vi, the team, would be top rated. Here's the stat for this last LAN, guys. At this last LAN, Na'Vi had a 0.96 rating as a team. Like, what? Dude, they would have had, like, 1.15 or something mental in their prime, or 1.10. Like, the joke was, the one thing you were never going to do is outshoot Na'Vi. You might beat them, but you're never going to outshoot them. Like, you can now. Like, there's actually a whole bunch of teams at this LAN. Like, the joke is OG had more firepower than Na'Vi at this LAN. Like, that is a massive area for them. So, to me, I think they've got so much to fix, mate. They've got the pieces to do it, but, man, that's a tough riddle to solve, in my opinion. So, God bless Blade. He's going to have his fucking work out for him, mate. Now we'll see if he is goated, Maui.
Yeah, I was thinking that, actually. If he's got any time to prove it, this is a really tough one, yeah.
It's weird, like, some of the math, like, you were talking about roles before. I do think that's, like, I think that's a little bit weird for me when I watch Na'Vi, that's changing the roles a little bit around, so it's, like, perfect in the theory, because they're putting Electronic in more of those positions where he can, like, talk more. But I think, like, watching him, for example, take banana control on Inferno on CT sites compared to watching him pit, it's just weird for me, like, because I just think that he's such a good player over there, you know? So it is, I know why it is, like, you want, like, the guy who's supposed to talk the most to be in that position, because you have to, like, every single round tell how you're going to take banana this round, like, depending on how the T's are doing last round and all that stuff. So in theory, I understand it, but I do think that maybe some, like, maybe they're trying a little bit too much to make it perfect or something. I don't know. But that part is definitely a little bit confusing.
Yeah, fair enough. Right, let's move on then, Maui. What is your point?
Okay, wait. I actually lost the window that I had it in. Shoot. Oh, yeah. Okay. This is kind of a weird ugly. It's kind of more like ugly because I think we're the one, maybe some of us are the ones with eggs on our faces here. It's just that I actually think that it's Valve did, even though we kind of were critical of a lot of things Valve have done in the last 6+ years, I think this update, even though it all came at once, it did almost everything right. I think, like, all the changes that they went for were basically good. Like, I think the Anubis one's good.
This should have been saved for hot take point, mate. This would be that would be a fucking edgy take. Like, I think Valve's update was good. Like,
I think everything was good. I think just about everything was good. I think I think the magic Molotovs going, like, hitting the skybox, I think that's a good change. I think the M4 The A1S balance is a good change. I think Anubis is a good change. I almost just think everything is good, and it's almost like finally they're taking all that data science stuff. Like, I mean, they were saying that they were using AI to start examining games and seeing, like, and they said, I don't know what, 4 or 5 years ago, don't worry, you'll see the results or the fruits for our labor here. And I think we're starting to see it, and I almost am, like, suspiciously optimistic of what Valve is doing with CS, because it actually seems like they're taking a lot of the right steps in the right direction. And I don't know, it's kind of like ugly, because it's almost like too meta, but it's almost like, is this AI actually just giving us all the right answers now for what the future of Valve and CS should be? Because it felt like it just took so long for this to happen. Like, there were so many bad ideas after bad ideas, but I think things are getting on the right track.
I think especially like the changes that makes it the maps more T-sided in general, like both weapons and economy and like the bug mollies and all that stuff. Like, I think that's like the right direction. I think there was such a long period of time where it was so CT-sided, and that was, at least from like a player perspective, that was so boring to play, because you just knew, like, you could almost, there's some maps you can almost not pick, because that if you start T-side on those maps, you're just gonna get mowed down. Like, you couldn't even pick overpass back, like, when it was really CT-sided, like back around like the last major, not this one, but the last one. Like, you couldn't even pick those kind of maps, because you know you just get, like, laser beamed through the smoke, like a nuke outside. You couldn't even try to get down secret, like, all those kind of stuff. So, yeah, I think, like, a lot of the changes that's made has been, like, really good, and it makes the game more exciting for sure.
Even the M4 change?
I think, personally, I think it's good, because I think a lot of people tell me, like, they are switching to the other one. But I know I'm staying on the silencer, and that's how, like, that's how I know it's,
because you're like a notorious abuser of that gun. I thought you'd be hating that change.
No, because I think it's good that it's like balanced enough that, and like the players that aren't as good on the silencer will change, because they need them.
You
like
want both to be viable, right?
Yeah, but for me, who, like, I think I'm really good with the silencer, like I can still use it and still have like success with it. So I think like that's like how you know it's a good change, that certain players can play with it and certain players can't play with it.
See the joke there. All the jokes write themselves nowadays, Blaybeth. They don't even need anyone to come up with it. I would say it would be a nightmare being on your team, because then you pick it up and you've got an M4, but it's you, so no one's picking up your gun, are they? So don't worry about it.
We did actually. Also
Everyone else is dead. About, exactly. So
we did actually also talk. By the way, it was a good joke. But we did also talk about like if we should all try to stay on the same.
All right. You
know, because then when you're dropping weapons, then it's not like awkward. But
yes,
there were some people that really wanted the other one, and I really wanted the silencer. So we had to like kind of like scratch that idea in the end.
Fair enough.
In a perfect world, like it is best if the team can kind of agree on the maps, like which weapon you're using, because it is weird if you're like practicing the silencer, then all of a sudden in a big round you're sitting with the other M4 and it's like it feels like different, you know. So I think that's like something that also has to be taken into consideration from the teams when they talk about like what M4 they want to use.
I have to say as well, just watching Blast alone again with the eye test, like seeing players like Config and Nico play with the M4A4 is just a fucking joy, mate. These are just phenomenal players with that weapon. It's just so sick to watch them play. So I'm actually, I agree with you, Blaybell. I think the best scenario, we've almost never had it in CS, unfortunately, is where you can do both. Like it's only really at the beginning of CSGO it was viable like that. Otherwise, normally one was just so OP, you feel like an idiot if you don't use that one. So I think it's quite fair now. I'll also say as well, dude, look at the results. Like, immediately you had way more T-rounds at this tournament. Immediately. Like, a mix of, I don't know if the AWP factor, I mean, I'm sure that made people save and have to reload sometimes and reposition. Like, I think in that sense, like, the actual effect on play, pretty sure Maui was better. Like, I'll give it that. I don't know about if it's all positive. I don't know if it's all positive. Like, pretty sure, I still think that AWP change is just so unnecessary. Like, I just don't know, you know what I mean? To me, that's like, everything else is fine, but why that one? You know, like, because that's one where it's like, that's why we always joke, like we said on Four Horsemen, it's like, yeah, Valve is just some, like Lovecraftian, like, deity, how we say. They're not a god that you go and pray to for what you want, because when you pray for what you want, you never get what you want. It's like some cursed shit, so it's like some cursed monkey paw shit with Valve. Like, oh, can you make a change to the guns? Yeah, sure, I've made the AWP have 5 bullets. What? No one wanted that. Like, well, you asked me to make a change. Like, oh, shit, I should have been more specific. Like, they always make some mad change like that. Like, who in the world ever said, even people who hate the AWP, who ever said, and because the main problem is the amount of bullets in the magazine. Like, no one even thought of that in the history of Counter-Strike in 20 plus years. No one's ever had that idea. And I still don't know what, like, the joke what we get in this game is, you know what I'll give credit to people like League of Legends and Riot for? They give you a reason in their patch notes as to why they did a move. Valve is like God again. They don't even have to explain themselves. They're like, yeah, the AWP has 5 bullets. Like, but why? Like, see you in a year. See you in a year, guys. Like, you never get to know why. We'll never know the reason why. I assume some Valve dev just got completely shit on by an AWP and repeating him 7 times or something like that. What is it? Why is that changed? So whatever. I'll give you the point in general. I'll give you it's a general point. Anything else on this one?
Just for the stat side of it, for the A4 versus A1S, I think it was 65% of the A4 kills were from the unsilenced and 35 were from the silencer.
Oh, that's
so
fair.
It was like actually like 2/3 of the people were using the A4. So that's, I think that's just kind of a cool development. And I think, I mean, going back to just kind of like the visual appeal of the A4, like the in arenas, like, obviously, I wasn't at the Abu Dhabi one, but like, it's just so much more muted if it's an A1S spraying people down through a smoke. Like, people just are not as excited, like the crowd and everything. But to hear the A4 roar again is just so great. And I think even like SDY had a really good round on Overpass, for example, where he just like had some sick transfer. And I don't know, just seeing those kinds of moments, like, you start to recognize the skill that some of these players have again. Because I think one of the worst things about the last year of CS is watching people A1S body spam and just kind of feel like, geez, yes. I think a lot of people could have done that. So, but now with A4 transfers, it's like, okay, wait, these people are like, everybody here is like so much better than the average player now.
Yes. It also just makes the AK so much more exciting, I think. I think Absolutely. That's also a big, like, one of the big points. It's just like, when you watch Nico, like, you're not thinking about his like silencer one shot. You're thinking about like the AK one shot, like the same with Config, like those kind of like really good rifle aimers that just headshots people. It's the AK you want to see that one tap other people with, right? It's not the silence. I'm not even yes. that much of an M4. I think that's more like a spray thing people have. But yeah, just watching the AK again, I think it's also more viable. Just if you know, like, before you knew, like, if the CT was sitting with a silencer and you had an AK, you didn't want to swing on him. Like, just take a one-on-one duel. But now I think it's way more viable to actually know, if you know you have a one-on-one duel against the M4 and you have an AK, it's actually more viable now to just take that one-on-one duel. There's a higher percent chance you're going to win that one. And that definitely changes the meta as well a little bit, that you can, like, it's like sort off these one-on-one duels. And if you know you get it, you can actually play around that.
Right, I'll do my point now. So the last point of the show, my ugly point, is just going to be how the year ended for FaZe Clan. Because think about, right, the way the player break went was this. They came back out, they looked all right in the group stage of EPL, but they got through, that's fine. And then they lost to Cloud9, but it was a super close game. Like, those games are always great when those two teams play. It was back and forth. Like, Axel had like 30 kill, plus 30 or something mental in the series. Like, it was a great series, and that's an up-and-coming team. So, like, everyone said back then, well, FaZe is better under pressure, that's like a studio LAN. The problem was, they did fuck all at the major, so that's already a bomber right there. Remember, the major could not only have been back-to-back, that was the Grand Slam chance as well. Like, there's all this narratives that never got going. And then these last two events, like, they were like one round from winning Blast 4 finals. And if they'd have done that, think about how all the narratives just magically get redeemed. Like, wow, they like close the year strong. Like, is there still even an era with the less LAN events? Like, what does this mean for like the, sadly, they didn't win that. And then even worse, when they came to this LAN, true, they lost to the team that won the tournament, G2. And by the way, the series against them in the semis is a good series. Like, it's a back and forth series. It even looks actually, quite frankly, like the sort of series they always won in the first part of the year. They're always in close matches. They're getting like the big clutch late. The difference is G2 sort of like, if you use the analogy of a boxer, they had like the response punch each time. It was like blow for blow, you know. And so like, it's not even that they played bad. Like, they were actually this close, no joke, FaZe, to maybe winning the last two blasts and ending the year really strong. But instead, they won neither event. They bombed the major. And so I just think it's kind of a, like, sorry, I put it in ugly. It's not even that they played bad, but it's just kind of like a bomber end to the year, because the difference is this year was just like, right, if one team is really hot, they can win this one LAN, and then the other, that, or FaZe wins everything. It's like FaZe was the only dominant force. So to me, even though some fans hate it when one team's on top, if you do it legit, like you actually are playing the best CS, best map pool, the best like overall, I think it's cool. I like it when there's a big leader and everyone can sort of chase them and judge themselves. You know, I think it just makes the scene more stable.
One thing that I think is funny to compare with the major finals versus the Blast World Finals is that actually the world rankings of the teams were actually higher at the Rio Major Grand Finals than at the Blast World Finals. I think going into it, I think it was like Liquid and G2, I think, were 8th and 12th or something, and Heroic and Outsiders were like 6th and 10th. So
okay,
that's kind of, it kind of reinforces the narrative that we've been a little bit against, which is this, that everybody can win right now, which is like, and I think maybe fans are curious as to why Thorin and I kind of have that opinion, but it's just that when eras of dominance are established, it just gives you something to latch onto. It gives you like everybody's trying to catch up to something. It gives everybody this ultimate objective that makes everybody feel like they have to strive to this level of greatness, which has been achieved by another team. And obviously, FaZe was that team this year, and right now with how they look, they almost kind of are starting to feel less like the championship sort of contender, and they're starting to more so feel like the gatekeeper to kind of make it or to prove yourself. And I think we are. I guess you can have a different opinion on what you want in that position, but you kind of want a team to be that one that's like. Like you're saying, Thorin, to be the one that if another team doesn't catch fire, a team like number one team in the world, FaZe, should win it. But now it doesn't necessarily even feel like that, and it's almost like they're just kind of in the mix, like everybody else in that top six range.
What do you think, Blim?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that like it's a bit annoying, but it's not as much as annoying for me because like I'm kind of happy, you know, there's not a team that just dominated game one, because then it's really hard to play against them, of course. For me, it's exciting that when you're going into next year and thinking that we also have a chance to be that team that can next year be the good team, you know, and that's a little bit harder to think if there's a team that looks really dominant, then you're like, okay, this team has to like, they have to like, you know, we have to pray for the downfall before we can start like think that we can be the next one, you know. But yeah, it does suck for FaZe, like look from the outside, because I do think they still have the players, like they still have different players stepping up in different games, and I still think they have looked like they are trying to like do something tactically that is like out of the ordinary, which I think Kerrigan is known for. So I don't think they've gone away from their principles, but it just hasn't really like gotten them over the last percentages. And just as you said before, like they could have won those matches, like also in this tournament. Like they have had so many matches where it's like I'm like think like usually that's a match that FaZe wins. Like 13-13, usually FaZe wins that one. But this, like last couple of months, maybe they lost it a little bit more.
That's also the weirdest thing, you know, is I'm telling you, if you go and look, FaZe has almost never ever just been crushed in a series. Dude, even the Bad News Eagles one, they were winning like 15-8 or something on the third map. Like, they never like get rocked out of the game. Like, that's one thing I got to give them props for, even when they haven't done that well. Like, aside from the major, if people don't know, every other tournament, the worst placing was quarters. Like, this was an epic year. It's just, it could have been even more epic.
I have a question for Blame F about FaZe. I kind of want to know from your perspective when you were watching, or maybe you played against them a couple times, like what do you think made them so dominant at the beginning of the year?
I think they have like Kerrigan, who's like really in charge of like making sure the overall works. I think, the first thing I want to say, I think they have like perfect roles. I think that's like one thing I want to say. Like, I think they have the best roles of all teams. But yeah, I think just like, they have so many individual players that are not afraid of like taking, like going in and making a play if they need to, you know. Like I think like Robs can, they're not afraid of like risking a round in order to like winning the round, and I think that goes from pretty much every single player on the team. So when you have that in almost four or five positions on the map, where like every single individual is not afraid to like decide the map by themselves, I think like that's something that's really strong, where most other teams rely on maybe one, two, or three people to be those, like, okay, like, this is a rose hitter, he's the guy making the play. But I don't think it's like that in this team. Even Kerrigan, like, is, like, making crazy plays, even though it doesn't always make perfect sense what he's doing, then he's, like, still not afraid of it. And when you're prepping against a team or playing against a team, it's very hard to make a good game plan against a team that has so many X factors. Because it's like, okay, we have to be ready for the default, but also every single player can go out of the default and make a decision by themselves. You know, that's really hard to make a good game plan against. And then you almost just always end up saying like, oh, let's play our own game instead, because like how we cannot make a game plan against that, you know? So I think that's like the biggest thing for me. It's like so many different individuals, they haven't been relying on one individual person. And I think it also looks from the outside like every person on the team is okay with that, because I think Bobs could go to another team and have better statistics.
Oh,
you know?
Sure,
but,
yes.
But it looks like everyone in the team has like made a conscious decision that we all have to be good enough to like end the round, and we all have to be good enough to like take that initiative and just like just try to end the round by themselves. And yeah, they seem like all okay with that.
That's a good way to look at it, because I think FaZe is that team right now that you could almost pick anyone on the team as as the player you think is most impactful for FaZe. And because like it's the team that leads to the most biased discussions
Oh, it
where
does.
your favorite player is going to be the best player on FaZe. Like I think Twist is the best player on FaZe, but like I'm probably a little bit biased too on that regard. Like I always feel like, oh, Twist made the move to actually open this round up. But like just as often you see Rain do it, or you see Brokey do it, or you see even Rops do it, and despite his passive nature. But I yeah, so the team that's a really good way to just sum up, I guess, what made them so characteristically strong.
One thing I'm a huge fan of, because I think it's so rare, is like it normally, right? The teams don't work like you just put this piece with this piece and it makes us both like normally it's like a like it, there's a mixture of like all the players. And sometimes you have a team where a player didn't play a certain way, but in this team he does. Like in their team, it is like someone tried on paper to put together like the most clutch players by role in one team, and it all works. Like they're all super clutch. It's ridiculous. Even Carrigan wins 1v1s in this team sometimes that people don't know. Like Rain, it all goes out saying he's good, everyone knows that. But like the other ones, like Brokey wins all the normal 1v1s. Every normal 1v1 and 1v2, he wins with the AWP because he's just really good at the close range. And mate, Twists and Rops, you're lucky if you get one player that can win impossible clutches. They have two. Like Rops, by the way, wins absolutely the most ridiculous clutches I've ever seen, like ever. Because he wins the ones that aren't even a real clutch. Like, here's the thing. I think there should be a difference between, like, I'm retaking, like, the A bomb site on Mirage, and your three T's are in that site, and I'm coming in and I have to kill you all. That's like a real 1v3 to me, Maui Snake. Rops wins the one where, like, everyone dies at the beginning of the round, and I'm on, like, fucking, like CT, and I'm like 1v4, but they're across the whole map, and I have to like find them all, create the fights. Like I have to instantly headshot this. Like he just does the impossible ones where you're supposed to just give up on the round. So I always thought in their team, if you think about it, like as you're saying, they can have impact in every area of the game. They can have the guy who just shoots two people in the head and instantly a site's open. You walk on it in Twists. You have like Brokey, who's just going to win any scenario he's in. Carrigan's going to call all these interesting players. Rain's going to have games, by the way, where he just tops frags for no reason. Your fourth best player. Top frag and have like a 1.2 rating at a tournament, and then if you don't get all those things, Rops might just win like two impossible rounds in a game for you. Like if you have players like that, that's also in my opinion why Carrigan is just completely fucking goated though, because I actually think in this sort of a team, if you just put all those players in the same team with a different IGL, they wouldn't all play that same way. They wouldn't have that same approach to the game as well. Like I actually think if you look like, remember, this is one of those ones where I'm not saying it to big up myself, but I did tell everyone, you know, last year when it was 2021 and everyone was like, will Rops go to FaZe or will he go to Vitality? You know, was that discussion. A lot of people, for real, their take, because in Mousy was playing a bit selfish, his level dropped off at the end. Their take was like, I don't even think him going to FaZe will do it. And I was like, that is all they need, literally. This is why. Because the difference is every player now in this team plays better than they did in almost any other team they ever played in. Like, they're almost at all their career peak at the same time. Dude, even Rain's better than he was in those years. Like when everyone was saying in the old phase with Olaf to cut Rain as well, let's not all pretend he played exactly like this for fuck's sake. Of course he didn't. No one would be telling him he cut. Like even he was at a low level. So to me, in my opinion, yes, he has fabulous pieces, but what a fucking great job Carrigan's done with his team. Like that's the dream. And that last part, you said it earlier as well, Blame. The idea they're all cool with it, that's fucking amazing as well, because I agree. If you were almost any of these players, like Twists and Rops, definitely, by the way, could go to a team and be like, I want to try and be number one in the world, so I want every resource, give me in. And they would look better, but they probably wouldn't win as much, obviously. So yeah, I think it's amazing. Like, to get that balance as an IGL, you've done a great job. What a fucking banger.
I also think that just looking from the outside, it looks like you've got like close to 100% out of every single
yes.
player on that team. Like the way they like to play, it has, like, Carrigan has made sure that everyone is playing how they like to play, but it's still making sense as a team. Like, I think that's, like, a very beautiful thing, that every single player, you can just see that, like, every single player is playing kind of how they did when they were the best in their, like, former teams, you know. Like, Rops is, like, still doing his lurking, but going, like, aggressive when he feels like it. Rain is, like, playing a lot of the rotation spots on CT, but T-side, he's, like, way more the guy running in first and creating the space. And Brogy is, like, have this freedom, it looks like, to peek whatever he wants, but still be the guy to go for the clutches when that's what he, like, wants to rely on. And it just looks like Kerrigan has done, like, an amazing job making sure that everyone is comfortable in that team.